Look at that, said Shadow. Wednesday sighed and looked down at the paper with an expression of pain, as if lowering his head hurt more than he could put into words.
I am delighted that the air traffic controller's dispute has been resolved without recourse to industrial action.
Not that. Look, it says it's the 14th of February.
Happy Valentine's Day.
So we set out January the what, 20th, 21st? I wasn't keeping track of the dates, but it was the third week of January. We were 3 days on the road, all told. So how is it the 14th of February?
Because we walked for almost a month, in the Badlands, backstage.
Hell of a shortcut.
Wednesday pushed the paper away.
Fucking Johnny Appleseed, always going on about Paul Bunyan. In real life, Chapman owned 14 apple orchards. He farmed thousands of acres. Yes, he kept pace with the western frontier, but there's not a story out there about him with a word of truth in it. Save that he went a little crazy once. But it doesn't matter. Like the newspapers used to say, if the truth isn't big enough, you print the legend. This country needs its legends, and even the legends don't believe it anymore.
But you see it.
I'm a has-been. Who the fuck cares about me?
You're a god.
Wednesday looked at him sharply. He seemed to be about to say something, and then he slumped back in his seat and looked down at the menu and said,
So?
It's a good thing to be a god.
Is it?
Asked Wednesday, and this time it was Shadow who looked away. In a gas station 25 miles outside Lakeside, on the wall by the restrooms, Shadow saw a homemade photocopied notice, a black-and-white photo of Allison McGovern and the handwritten question, Have you seen me, above it. Same yearbook photograph, smiling confidently, a girl with rubber band braces on her top teeth who wants to work with animals when she grows up. Have you seen me? Shadow bought a Snickers bar, a bottle of water, and a copy of the Lakeside News. The above-the-fold story, written by Marguerite Olson, our Lakeside reporter, showed a photograph of a boy and an older man out on the frozen lake, standing by an outhouse-like ice fishing shack, and between them they were holding a big fish. They were smiling. Father and son catch record northern pike. Full story inside. Wednesday was driving. He said,
Read me anything interesting you find in the paper.
Shadow looked carefully, and he turned the pages slowly, but he couldn't find anything. Wednesday dropped him off in the driveway outside his apartment. A smoke-colored cat stared at him from the driveway, then fled when he bent to stroke it. Shadow stopped on the wooden deck outside his apartment and looked out at the lake, dotted here and there with green and brown ice fishing huts. Many of them had cars parked beside them. On the ice nearer the bridge sat the old green clunker, just as it had sat in the newspaper.
March the 23rd,
said Shadow encouragingly.
Around 9:15 in the morning. You can do it.
Not a chance,
said a woman's voice.
April 3rd, 6 p.m. That way the day warms up the ice.
Shadow smiled. Marguerite Olson was wearing a ski suit. She was at the far end of the deck, refilling the bird feeder with white blocks of suet.
I read your article in the Lakeside News on the town record, Northern Pike.
Exciting, huh?
Well, educational, maybe.
I thought you weren't coming back to us. You were gone for a while, huh?
My uncle needed me. The time kind of got away from us.
She placed the last suet brick in its cage and began to fill a net sock with thistle seeds from a plastic milk jug. Several goldfinches, olive in their winter coats, twittered impatiently from a nearby fir tree.
I didn't see anything in the paper about Allison McGovern.
There wasn't anything to report. She's still missing. There was a rumor that someone had seen her in Detroit, but it turned out to be a false alarm.
Poor kid.
Marguerite Olson screwed the top back onto the gallon jug.
I hope she's dead.
Shadow was shocked.
Why?
Because the alternatives are worse.
The goldfinches hopped frantically from branch to branch of the fir tree, impatient for the people to be gone. A downy woodpecker joined them.
You aren't thinking about Allison,
thought Shadow.
You're thinking of your son. You're thinking of Sandy.
He remembered someone saying,
I miss Sandy.
Who was that?
Good talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
February passed in a succession of short gray days. Some days the snow fell, most days it didn't. The weather warmed up, and on the good days it got above freezing. Shadow stayed in his apartment until it began to feel like a prison cell, and then, on the days that Wednesday did not need him, he began to walk. He would walk for much of the day, long trudges out of the town. He walked alone until he reached the National Forest to the north and the west, or the cornfields and cow pastures to the south. He walked the Lumber County Wilderness Trail, and he walked along the old railroad tracks, and he walked the back roads. A couple of times he even walked along the frozen lake, from north to south. Sometimes he'd see locals or winter tourists or joggers, and he'd wave and say hi. Mostly he saw nobody at all, just crows and finches, and a few times he spotted a hawk feasting on a roadkill possum or raccoon. On one memorable occasion, he watched an eagle snatch a silver fish from the middle of the White Pine River, the water frozen at the edges, but still rushing and flowing at the center. The fish wriggled and jerked in the eagle's talons, glittering in the midday sun. Shadow imagined the fish freeing itself and swimming off across the sky, and he smiled. If he walked, he discovered, he did not have to think, and that was just the way he liked it. When he thought, his mind went to places he could not control, places that made him feel uncomfortable. Exhaustion was the best thing. When he was exhausted, his thoughts did not wander to Laura, or to the strange dreams, or to things that were not and could not be. He would return home from walking, and sleep without difficulty and without dreaming. He ran into Police Chief Chad Mulligan in George's barbershop in the town square. Shadow always had high hopes for haircuts, but they never lived up to his expectations. After every haircut, he looked more or less the same, only with shorter hair. Chad, seated in the barber's chair beside Shadow's, seemed surprisingly concerned about his own appearance. When his haircut was finished, he gazed grimly at his reflection, as if he were preparing to give it a speeding ticket.
"It looks good."
"Would it look good to you if you were a woman?"
"I guess."
They went across the square to Mabel's together, ordered mugs of hot chocolate. Chad said,
"Hey, Mike, have you ever thought about a career in law enforcement?"
"I can't say I have. Seems like there's a whole lot of things you gotta know."
"You know the main part of police work somewhere like this? It's just keeping your head. Something happens, somebody's screaming at you, screaming blue murder. You simply have to be able to say that you're sure that it's all a mistake and you'll just sort it all out if they just step outside quietly. And you have to be able to mean it."
"And then you sort it out?"
"Mostly, that's when you put handcuffs on them. But yeah, you do what you can to sort it out. Let me know if you want a job. We're hiring, and you're the kind of guy we want."
"I'll keep that in mind, if the thing with my uncle falls through."
They sipped their hot chocolate. Mulligan said,
"Say, Mike, what would you do if you had a cousin, like a widow, and she started calling you?"
"Calling you how?"
"On the phone, long distance. She lives out of state."
His cheeks crimsoned.
"I saw her last year at a family wedding out in Oregon. She was married back then, though. I mean, her husband was still alive, and she's family. Not a first cousin, pretty distant."
"You got a thing for her?"
"I don't know about that."
"Well, then put it another way. Does she have a thing for you?"
"Well, she said a few things when she called. She's a very fine-looking woman."
"So, what are you going to do about it?"
"I could ask her out here. I could do that, couldn't I? She's kind of said she'd like to come up here."
"You're both adults. I'd say go for it."
Chad nodded and blushed and nodded again. The telephone in Shadow's apartment was silent and dead. He thought about getting it connected, but could think of no one he wanted to call. Late one night, he picked it up and listened, and was convinced that he could hear a wind blowing and a distant conversation between a group of people whose voices were too faint to distinguish. He said,
"Hello? Who's there?"
But there was no reply, only a sudden silence, and then the faraway sound of laughter. So faint, he was not certain he was not imagining it. Shadow made more journeys with Wednesday in the weeks that followed. He waited in the kitchen of a Rhode Island cottage and listened while Wednesday sat in a darkened bedroom and argued with the woman who would not get out of bed, nor would she let Wednesday or Shadow look at her face. In the refrigerator was a plastic bag filled with crickets. and another filled with the corpses of baby mice. In a rock club in Seattle, Shadow watched Wednesday shout his greeting over the noise of the band to a young woman with short red hair and blue spiral tattoos. That talk must have gone well, for Wednesday came away from it grinning delightedly.